7 months after the invasion of Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin seems to be losing the war.
They're on their heels. Morale seems to be very poor in the Russian military. Their soldiers are poorly equipped. People are not exactly sure what the strategy is. And so, you know, it's a very fraught time.
That's our colleague Matthew Dalton. And he says it's so fraught because Putin isn't showing any signs of retreat. 2 weeks ago, he called up the reserves and he repeated veiled nuclear threats. And then last week, two things happened that suggested Putin is doubling down. First, there were major explosions on gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea that raised suspicions of Russian-backed sabotage, which the Kremlin denies. And then Friday, Russia annexed four regions of Ukraine, suggesting that Russia is far from giving up. Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Limbaugh. It's Tuesday, October 4th. Coming up on the show, Putin is losing the war, so he's raising the stakes.
This episode is brought to you by GlobalX ETFs. Looking to invest? Start your journey by exploring exchange-traded funds with GlobalX ETFs. Exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, create baskets of stocks, bonds, and other assets that you can buy in a single trade. GlobalX specializes in ETFs that track emerging trends, like the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as strategies aimed to generate income potential. Visit GlobalXETFs.com to discover how you can get started.
Last Monday, scientists in Northern Europe came across something strange.
It looks like a very large jacuzzi in the Baltic Sea. It's just, you know, kind of bubbling, like a big whirlpool of bubbles in the middle of the ocean.
This jacuzzi was natural gas bubbling up to the surface.
Denmark and Sweden noticed that there were very large methane leaks coming out of the Baltic Sea.
And these leaks were coming from two pipelines that connect Russia's gas fields to Germany. They're called Nord Stream 1 and 2. Almost immediately, warnings were issued for ships to avoid the area and for aircraft to fly higher in the sky.
Governments across Europe began to increase security around their natural gas installations. Norway took that step. They've been boosting security on their fields in the North Sea. There have been steps taken to fortify other natural gas infrastructure, such as the facilities that import liquefied natural gas.
These leaks were so alarming because the pipelines lay on the seafloor, 300 feet underwater, and they're made of strong, corrosion-resistant steel that's covered in concrete.
They're meant to withstand, you know, gas at very high pressure, you know, to move along more than 700 miles from Russia to the German coast. So, yeah, it's not something that's going to just spring a leak easily. It seemed quite clear that this was due to an explosive device. The Danish officials, I've been told, estimated the size of each explosion at about the equivalent of 500 kilograms of TNT. And so it's sort of the Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is the most likely one.
And the simplest explanation of what happened?
A deliberate act of sabotage.
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 The Nord Stream pipeline sabotage.
The apparent sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline.
Sabotage was the cause of rare gas leaks in two major pipelines which connect Russia and Europe.
Suspicions went very quickly to Russia. I mean, Russia is in an economic war, an energy war with Europe. And so this act, which would put new upper pressure on prices, is something that, you know, potentially Europe's adversary would be interested in doing. So several countries said if this were Russia, this would be a serious escalation of the conflict and would have serious repercussions.
And the EU is suspicious of Russia. What are they going to do about it?
Well, first they have to figure out what happened. They need solid evidence that it was Russia. They're not going to do anything more beyond conducting an investigation and trying to figure out it was Russia. Now, and then there's the question, well, what can they really do in terms of retaliation? They're already, you know, they've sanctioned Russia every which way.
How does Russia react?
Well, Russia says, we had nothing to do with this. And, you know, how could this happen given all of the NATO facilities and equipment in the Baltic Sea? And, you know, Russia, in a tactic that they're well known for, was trying to kind of play jujitsu and throw the suspicion right back at where all the criticism was coming from, which was NATO itself and the U.S., the most important partner of NATO.
A big part of the energy war between Russia and Europe is over natural gas. Russia was Europe's biggest supplier. But over the summer, Russia interrupted those supplies. And last month, it turned off the main Nord Stream pipeline altogether. For months, European countries have been scrambling to find new sources of natural gas.
So they've been trying like hell to buy gas from any other supplier. So that includes buying a lot more gas from Norway, which is its friendly petrostate to the north. And they've been relying a lot more on liquefied natural gas shipped from the United States. That has been key to supplying Europe without Russia. Without that, Europe would be in big trouble.
If they're relying more on gas from Norway, are those pipelines also vulnerable to sabotage?
That's certainly the fear, you know, that these attacks were, I think, a wake-up call for the entire region about its energy infrastructure. And yeah, those pipelines are vulnerable. There's a new pipeline that is just open that brings gas from Norway to Poland. It's called Baltic Pipe. There's fears that that is vulnerable. You know, and this infrastructure is very difficult to protect because it stretches over hundreds and hundreds of miles. You know, all told, you've got thousands of miles of pipelines you've got to oversee. And, you know, an attack at any part in the pipeline can disable it for a long period of time. So everybody is now more cognizant of that risk.
But the gas had already been turned off. So why was it such a big deal?
So it forecloses the possibility that it can be turned on again. You know, and you look at the prices in the European gas market, there's some priced into the market right now, or at least before the explosion happened, priced into that market was the possibility that, well, the gas could come back on relatively easily and things could sort of go back to normal, at least for the European energy market. Unlikely, though that was, it was a possibility that was in there. And without that possibility, the prices are going to go up.
If Russia did carry out this attack, how aggressive is that move in the economic war?
It says that, you know, not only do they want to, you know, substantively not sell gas to Europe, but they also want to send the message that it's over. You know, that it's not just, you know, we're not selling you gas anymore. We're turning off the spigot. It's also, we're not going to be able to sell you gas. We're
done.
We're done. That's it.
As the energy war between Moscow and Europe escalates, so has the military war in Ukraine. That's coming up.
This episode is brought to you by C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems. But buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
How well do we know the people we work with every day? We share lunches, jokes, and deadlines, but are we aware of the unseen struggles we often face silently? Stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or feeling misunderstood at work. Through insight, awareness, and empathy, we can start to better see the issues our coworkers are dealing with, and that can make us and our companies healthier too. Join Holly Robinson-Peete and her guests on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare.
Days after being accused of sabotage, Russia had a major celebration in Red Square with live performances of rock, of ballads, of rap. And in the middle of the concert, Russian President Vladimir Putin came out to speak, and the crowd went wild.
Владимирович Путин!
Dear friends, today is a special, solemn, and without any exaggeration, historical day. A day of truth and justice. I can't help but remember how the USSR was formed when Russia created modern-day Ukraine.
This event was to celebrate the annexation of four territories in Ukraine. Russia held referendums in these states and claimed voters there overwhelmingly backed the annexations. But the West and Ukraine have called the referendums a sham.
These referenda were being held at gunpoint. Nobody thinks that the people there had a free choice, a free decision on whether to vote against. And, you know, people wielding weapons, manning the voting stations. You know, this is a way for the Kremlin and Vladimir Putin to draw a line in the sand.
How can this happen? How can one country just annex another country's land?
Well, you're not. It's supposed to be against the United Nations Charter, which respects internationally recognized borders. But you can do it at gunpoint. That's the only way that Russia could do it.
Russia appointed four leaders, one to each region. It also distributed Russian passports to people there and plans to use the ruble as the area's currency. How did Ukraine react to this annexation?
Well, Ukraine, among other things, condemned it and said it would be applying to join NATO, which is something that has been kind of at the heart of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, you know, for the past decade.
And what has the reaction from the West been?
The reaction of the West is to condemn it universally. They've said that they will never recognize the validity of these referenda, that the territories in question are part of Ukraine, the internationally recognized borders of Ukraine, and that that's the way it's going to be. And Russia's attempt to legitimize its military operation is not going to work.
The Kremlin has dismissed criticism of its seizure of Ukrainian land, and Putin has indicated that the military campaign will continue until its goals are met. What is the state of the conflict there?
Russia is on its heels. Ukrainian forces are advancing rapidly. They appear to have taken control of Lyman, which is a key city in the region. Russia's forces are under-equipped. They can't match up with the sophisticated weaponry that the Ukrainian military is getting, principally from the U.S., but also a number of European countries. So this is, you can see this as a somewhat desperate act, along with Putin's decision to start a mobilization of the Russian armed forces that will bring in a lot of people with more limited or no military experience to go and fight in Ukraine.
Calling up the reservists.
Exactly.
Where do we go from here?
I think this will only fortify the spines of the Europeans and the U.S. to continue supporting the Ukrainian military. You know, they've seen that Ukraine, given the proper equipment and advanced weapons, is very capable of
fighting back against Russia. That's maybe the most important takeaway militarily from the last few months. This is not just kind of throwing weapons down a black hole and wasting a whole bunch of money. The West support of Ukraine is really working. And so I think these events are, they're probably going to stiffen the spine of countries to continue doing that.
But there's one major caveat. In recent speeches, Putin has repeatedly made a veiled threat to go nuclear.
And that's sort of the awful threat looming over the annexations in particular, is that Russia is probably, you know, all things being equal, more likely to go nuclear now.
That seems incredibly frightening.
Yep. You know, it's just hard to get inside. The black box and through this whole thing has always been Vladimir Putin's head and what is going on in that head. And trying to predict where he's going to go next with this has always been the most difficult thing in terms of the strategy and the planning of how to deal with Russia.
How do these two events, this potential Russian-backed sabotage of the pipeline and the annexation of these territories, fit together, if at all?
One can only speculate. Those two potential actions are both very, very hardline responses. Now, we don't know if they're coming from the same place, but it is concerning.
That's all for today, Tuesday, October 4th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Additional reporting in this episode by Dan Michaels, Ann Simmons, and Marcus Walker. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.